right, listen to this, dear Art. You once said that no one has shown any evidence yet to prove the alien autopsy film to be a fake. Tonight, your guest said that the recovered bodies from the Roswell crash had no sex organs. The autopsy film clearly showed female genitalia. So, which is true? One has to be a hoax. Barry in Arizona. Well, Barry, I would observe the following. If you listen to the Colonel carefully, he suggested, number one, not only was there no sex organ, but there were no, there was no eyes, there was no mouth. There was very little relationship in what he described to what was shown in the alien autopsy. However, to take your point, in what I saw in the alien autopsy, there was no sex. I think that what you did see in the alien autopsy did not clearly show a female sex organ. It showed a lack of anything, or at least that's my recollection. It showed a lack of really anything. So again, that's my recollection, but beyond question, what the Colonel described and what was in the alien autopsy are clearly entirely different things. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Hi, Art. This is Donna from Anchorage. I just want to make one quick comment about tonight's show.
Sure.
I found it very interesting and not sure how to react to the whole situation and what we heard tonight on the radio, but I think it's a good idea to that if you could get a tape of the show to your friend who does the reverse speech stuff, that might be interesting to listen to also.
I would imagine that could be arranged.
Yeah, I think.
And I would bet you, I would be willing to bet you a substantial amount of money that you would find the Colonel was congruent.
Oh, I would probably say so, but I would think it would be very, very interesting to hear what has to be said in the reverse speech.
I mean, I've thought of this a million different ways. What possible reason would an 82-year-old man who hobnobbed with presidents, was in the exact position he said he was in, doing exactly what he said he was doing, why would such a man concoct a great fish story like this? I don't buy it.
I don't think it's even feasible that he would even think about concocting the story. It's a pretty amazing thing to have heard and to think about.
Yes,
you know?
And so if you believe it, then our history is a lie.
Very true.
But your suggestion is a valuable one, and I will pursue it.
Thank you, Art. We love your show.
Thank you. Take care. Why not? And I'll bet you. I'll bet you anything it comes out congruent. Anybody want to lay a little bet on that one? I guess we're not supposed to do that kind of thing, huh? But I bet all the time on things. I've got a couple of bets going right now that I really can't tell you about. International Line, you're on the air.
Oh, hi. It's Joey here. From Western Australia.
Western Australia. Yes, sir.
Yeah, I'm ringing up, but you got Major Dames on tonight, haven't you?
No, I do not. I had Colonel Corso on tonight, along with Dr. John Alexander.
Right. Well, you've got to forgive me. I'm actually ringing from somewhere I don't have access to. One, I don't have access to a radio, and two, I can't receive the station over here anyway. But
interesting. You should mention Ed Dames, though, because I've got a fax in front of me from Major Ed Dames. And Colonel Corso, an eyewitness to the alien bodies and to the alien technology, said on this program this evening that the bodies of these aliens deteriorated very rapidly. And Ed Dames, who has commented in the past on Roswell, just faxed me and said the bodies, Art, deteriorated, in quotes, to the point where they disappeared. And Ed Dames has said in the past that he believes that Roswell was, in effect, covered up with time travel.
I find it quite interesting, actually. It's a bit scary, though, isn't it?
Interesting and scary, yes. I think that's about right. Is there anything else we can do for you?
Yeah, basically I was ringing up because I saw the photo on your website.
Oh, which one?
The alien. And I've actually seen an alien like that, but it was actually in a dream, and I saw it before the actual photo ended up on the website.
Well, if I were you, I would seek out a clinical hypnotist and try and find out whether you actually dreamt that or whether perhaps you had an experience that can only be accounted for through regressive hypnosis, sir. Thank you. West of the Rockies, you're on the air.
Yes. I had a comment about tonight's show.
Okay.
Yes, sir. I didn't hear all of it, but I'd heard the previous interview with Colonel Corso.
Right, which was essentially, it was a little different than tonight, but essentially the same information.
Yes, and I haven't read the book. I'd be very interested in doing so. But I've got to say, firstly, I'm a big fan of your show, but I'm very skeptical about this, and I think that people shouldn't get too excited too quickly. There are a number of things that concern me here. You know, firstly, if you think about the technology involved in fiber optics, integrated circuits, and such,
yes,
this is really most of this was a logical extension of existing technology.
Well, you're going to have to lay down some foundation for that one because I don't see it.
Well, just as the transistor represented early experimentation with solid-state technology, and that was an extension of vacuum tubes and such, the integrated circuit...
A transistor... Wait a minute. One at a time here, all right?
All right.
A transistor is not a logical extension of a vacuum tube.
In the sense that both involve amplification. It is. Obviously, one involves solid state, and the other is a completely different form of technology. But what I'm really alluding to is the advance of technology over time, the progression of technology over time. And I think when Corso's book first came out, didn't somebody look at and actually interview some of the major companies that held patents, or whose employees had actually patented some of this
technology? Did you not hear Colonel Corso say that they were encouraged to file patents on this technology that was developed with budget money that he supplied?
But I find that interesting, too, because I have worked on a number of major government research programs. I'm familiar with government contracts, and a couple of them were so-called black programs, classified programs. And that would be a very unusual way to proceed. In fact, the government normally would only provide that kind of data in the course of a government contract, a contract for the development of some product or some technology.
That's exactly what he said he did.
Well, again, so you have to forgive me. I didn't hear all of the show earlier, and I may have missed that part of it. But normally, until very recently, the government would retain patent rights for itself.
Yeah.
And not grant those kind of rights to the contractor. Now, this may have been a very unusual case, but I also don't know here what criteria the government used.
Okay, well, first of all, you're quite correct. You missed all of that foundation that was laid at the beginning of the program. So you might have missed it, and you might be out of luck, because we laid all of that foundation at the beginning of the program. I appreciate your call, sir, but I disagree with you that it was a natural progression from vacuum tube technology to solid state. There's no natural progression there at all. Yes, both devices produce amplification. But the method, there is no natural progression you could cite with regard to the methods. And as far as fiber optics is concerned, that technology offers us more than we can even contemplate today as it's laid out. So, no, I buy what the Colonel had to say. What about you? First time caller line, you're on the air.
Thank you very much for taking my phone call, Art. My name is Pat from San Pedro, which is in the Southern California area.
Yes, sir.
Art, earlier you asked your guest, the lieutenant, whether or not the Congress should Lieutenant Colonel.
Yes.
Should have a open, somewhat of a public hearing on the the claims that he's been making, which
yes.
I think was very wise of you. And what I would like to do as one of your many millions of listeners is ask you to possibly have maybe your, I forgot his name, the reversal person?
David Oates.
David Oates, to do some reversals on what he's been saying. And that way we can start from the beginning, which would be with the Art Bell Show, have the reversals done, and then we can confirm the Colonel's sayings. Can we not do that, Art?
Yes, and I told a caller from Anchorage, Alaska, a few minutes ago that we will do that.
That's beautiful. Now, excuse me for not hearing that. And if I may ask one more question, John Alexander was talking about how he's been developing or is involved in a non-lethal
weapons technology.
Weapons. What is that? What kind of non-lethal weapons are we talking about? Squirt guns? I mean, what is it that he's involved in? What type of non-lethal? I mean,
well, that
we
would
talk about war.
That, yeah,
about
that would
kill.
That would take a show to do with John Alexander, which, by the way, I have done, and we will do another. It would take too much time right now. But weapons, sir, when they're talking about non-lethal weapons, and you're talking about war, it is more desirable to, for example, take your enemy, to cripple your enemy, to hurt your enemy, as opposed to killing. Now, if you and I are having a war and I've got 100 guys and you've got 100 guys,
right,
and we're shooting at each other, mm-hmm. I'm better off wounding one of your guys, because when I do, it's going to take one or two more of your guys to take him behind the lines, and in other words, you take out not just one, but two or three.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying, Art, but I've heard so many other times also that there's no rules to war, and you just go in and just annihilate them. And,
well, since when, sir?
Well,
since the Second World War, since we dropped the atomic bomb, maybe.
Absolutely.
But Vietnam, did we go in that war to win it? We could have won it. Did we, though? No.
Unfortunately not. You know why?
Go back to Korea. Did we? We could have won that war. We had the bomb. We could have dropped it. Did we?
You know the reason why we didn't win those wars, Art?
Because we didn't have the will.
And then why didn't we have the will?
You tell me.
I think it's because we didn't know what we were fighting about, and there really wasn't any particular direction to go into, and it was a governmental type of setup war, unfortunately. You know, it was like a war. It seems to me, you know, I wasn't there.
Well, you gave me a definition of what war was, and I gave you two wars that were not that at all. So, thank you very much for the call. If you're asking about why develop non-lethal technology, why develop non-lethal weapons, I gave you the answer. The very nature of modern warfare is not as you suggested. In a perfect world, it would be. In other words, once you're going to literally go to war with another country, and you are going to commit the lives, the flesh, the blood of your countrymen, you don't fight a partial war. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Hi.
Hi. Turn your radio off, please.
The radio's now off.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm calling from New Brunswick, Canada.
Yes, sir.
I'd just like to make a comment about tonight's information from the colonel there.
Sure.
I think the information, if the governments choose to give it out, would more or less unite everybody to a common cause, if you understand what I'm getting at.
And that common cause would be?
Well, it would be like our humanity itself would not be alone out there. We could, like, unite ourselves for the one common goal of reaching out into the stars. You know what I'm saying?
Well, according to the colonel, these are not necessarily our friends.
Well, that's true, but that would unite us against one common enemy then. So I'm thinking if...
One reason we might not know about it is, if our government is, as the colonel suggests, fully aware,
yeah,
and they have no control, they still haven't figured out all of the technology,
yeah,
and they can't control what flies in our skies, then they're not going to admit it's there, because
yeah,
they can't do a damn thing about it.
Yeah. So I think they're going at a wrong angle. I think that if they told us, we'd all be much happier and more stable, because we'd have a common foe to unite against. If you were talking about World War II, well, all of us, all allies went against the common foe, when for a while there we're all united, even with Russia.
How old are you?
I am 20 years old.
20. So you really don't remember a lot of the Reagan administration, do you?
No.
There were many times when Ronald Reagan made reference to exactly what you're suggesting. He said, if there are others, then we would unite as a world to fight them. Ronald Reagan said that again and again and again, at least 4 or 5 times during his presidency.
Okay.
Why would you think he'd say something like that?
I really don't know. I guess to prepare ourselves, or I'm not exactly sure why he would say that, but
well, maybe he knew something that he wanted us to think about.
Oh, I think Mr. Reagan knew a lot more than he probably told us about a lot of things too.
You bet. If any president knew, sir, I think probably President Reagan would have known. East of the Rockies, you're on the air.
Yes, Art, KRN920, Arkansas.
Yes, sir.
Didn't Philip Corso say John McClellan was one of the senators?
Didn't he what?
John McClellan of Arkansas was one of the senators.
He mentioned him, yes.
I thought he did, and he later said John McCormick. But John McClellan was on the Un-American Committee.
Yes, Un-American Activities.
All right, and I think one of the emotions might be anger. You know, we got some of the things. How many things were kept secret?
How many still are kept secret? Yes. I don't know.
And John McClellan.
What I do know, though, is that I believe Colonel Corso.
Yes, I do, too, because John McClellan bets him for me. Because when Jimmy Carter ran, he actually apologized.
I know.
To the Arkansas people for having to vote for him. For party loyalty.
Well, Jimmy Carter made some other apologies, too. Thank you. Jimmy Carter, I believe, was well aware of much of what the colonel just said tonight, and more, no doubt more. And Jimmy Carter, as you know, when he ran for office, said that he would reveal to the American public, as a campaign promise, what he found out about extraterrestrial life, about UFOs. He saw one himself. And I am not ever going to forget a call I got from a listener, which I regarded as absolutely genuine not long ago, in which a caller said he had gone to a book signing of Jimmy Carter's. And Jimmy Carter, and I can relate this fairly accurately, I believe, Jimmy Carter was sitting there, as you do when you're at a book signing, hours on end, kind of not looking up or hardly making eye contact with whoever is in front of you, because you're signing one after another after another. And that's what Jimmy Carter was doing, signing very quickly. But my caller took the time to make eye contact with Jimmy Carter, caused him to make eye contact, and asked him specifically about his campaign promise. And Jimmy Carter, according to the caller, stopped cold, and tears formed in his eyes. And he never really said anything about it. And that was the end of the encounter. But it says a lot, doesn't it? Because whatever you may or may not think, or I may or may not think, of the effectiveness of Jimmy Carter as president, one thing he was an honest man, still is, an honest man. And what is it they could have told Jimmy Carter that would have prevented him from keeping his campaign promise? What single thing could have been so profound that to this very day, Jimmy Carter has such an internal struggle, because he's such an honest man, and he is, no matter what else you think of him, that it would bring him to tears to not be able to tell the truth? That's worth a little thought. All right, Art, first of all, I've heard the Colonel on 2020 and on your program now. I found that this evidence that he brings to the table is probably the most credible since Jesse Marcel's own account of the 47 crash. Although we are forced to take his word on most of what he says, there's one thing that sticks out in his story. If he were to make up a story like this, he could tell us incredible stories of things that would be impossible to imagine, but instead, he explains why we have a lot of the technical advances of everyday life. The most credible part of his witness, in my opinion, is the fact that he is in his 80s and led, as you have stated so properly, an honorable and heroic life. I myself am in my mid-30s, grew up without a grandfather, and being raised in a rural environment in central Kansas, less than 80 miles from Fort Riley. I've made it a point in my life to get to know the elders in my community, and I'm sure you can attest that most of them are by far a cut above the rest of us when it comes to values, morality, or just plain old honorable character. For most of them have lived hardships of war, depression, civil rights movements, many other things that because of their strength and integrity to make this country what it is today, we have not had to endure these painful events. Bottom line, I have no problem taking his word on what he has told us. The only concern I have now is that I hope whoever has replaced him in his position of putting this technology to good use will use the same wise and honorable judgments the Colonel did. Shane in Kansas City. Dear Art, good show. You must have seen the version of the alien autopsy they showed on Fox Network on TV. Yes, I did. On that version, the genitalia was smudged out. On the VCR tape version, rented from any video store, it clearly shows female genitalia. Well, okay, fine, Barry, you may be correct. And you're right, that is what I saw, the Fox version. But even so, Barry, if you compare the descriptions of the creature that the Colonel told us about tonight and the other features that were apparent in the alien autopsy, there was no relationship whatsoever, none. A sort of a loose relationship in with regard to the concept of an EBE or something that was designed specifically for space travel. Otherwise, the physical descriptions did not match. Or this from Los Angeles Art. I'd put $10,000 in an escrow account payable to the first person or persons that can prove Philip Corso is lying. I would go higher. But some people can get pretty creative if the funding is incorporated in the prize. On behalf of all those who want the truth, thanks for having the courage to let us hear it. Well, I must tell you, and I don't frequently make judgments myself about, you know, what I've heard from guests. It's not my way. But I believe that what we heard was the truth. And let's try and go to my international line. You're on the air. Hello.
Hi, Eric.
Hello there.
It's Tim from Calgary, Alberta.
Welcome to the program.
How you doing?
I'm doing.
Just a couple of things. I'd heard a caller last night who had made some comments about a flag-burning incident in Vancouver.
Yes.
I just wanted to clarify part of that. The gentleman who did burn the flag was an American citizen.
That's dual citizenship. That's what I've heard. And I've also heard that that he has apologized.
Yeah, he did. He issued a formal apology on Monday to both Canada for embarrassing us and to the United States for doing something to his own country like that. And so I just wanted to make sure that everybody understood that, because Canadians do a better class in that, despite the issues we may have the odd time.
Right. Well, look, it's like good neighbors, even in any neighborhood, occasionally there come disputes.
That's right.
But we have, and forever will be, despite a lot of jokes I have about the Canadian invasion plan, we're always going to be very, very close friends.
And the other thing I wanted to mention, too, is the caller from Edmonton had mentioned a couple of light sightings a month ago.
Yes.
That were caught on tape.
Yes, sir.
I have witnesses here in Calgary that did see that incident because it was seen all over the place, and I have an aunt who lives in a place where it's owned by a family that's Mayan related.
Mm-hmm.
And their son goes to Mexico every year for 2 months, and they do a lot of sky watching with a powerful telescope. And they told her one day, you know, we see these things all the time, and she's very skeptical, and she said, well, next time you see it, doesn't matter what time of the day it is, just come and get me. And so it was a month ago. It was about 1:30 in the morning when it occurred. They pulled her outside, and they showed her a clear area of the sky just where she could see a normal star constellation. And so she saw that, and then they flipped it over and they said, watch the object. And she said what she described it as was a bright star. It got closer and closer and closer, and then it stopped and broke off into 3 sections. And I just asked her, I said, what did you see? And she said the objects were, the top part was spinning opposite from the bottom piece.
Boy.
So it was like watching a top in the middle of the sky.
Well,
it has lights in between.
That's particularly interesting. There is a videotape, and thank you. As that other caller said, that videotape is on the way to me. When it gets here, be sure that I will get still photographs taken from it and get the video up for you in the form of some sort of motion file. You can be sure I will do that. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Art?
Yes.
This is Jim, southeast of Little Rock, Arkansas.
Yes, sir. Welcome.
K-A-R-A-N.
Yes, sir.
It's a very interesting show with the colonel coming on.
Yes.
And he raised a lot of things when he mentioned engines. It brought up something, an acquaintance of mine just attended an air show in Mississippi. And they were told to the hour and minute that a B-2 bomber was going to be doing a flyover. With the air show, they were told to the hour and minute that it would appear, and to the very minute, he said there was something strange come flying through the sky. He said, he doesn't see yet how that thing flies. It just astounded him. And he said it circled, it did a low pass, did a right bank, turned around, came back, and did a low pass, and then it was gone.
I've heard
but
this.
But he said it was no noise.
Yeah, I've heard this from a number of people.
No noise.
Right.
And I was hoping that I could get through in time to ask the colonel about this. You know, because, anytime, if you've been around any military aircraft, let alone private aircraft.
Sure.
When they go into a bank and do turns.
Rattle your teeth.
You're going to hear it.
Yeah.
Because they have to use some thrust.
Well, they may be using some new sort of noise cancellation technology. Who knows?
Exactly, but I was hoping I would be able to get through to raise that. And I didn't catch how to get a hold of the colonel's book.
Any bookstore.
Any bookstore
sure.
should carry it.
Sure,
as long as you got the title and the author.
It's called The Day After Roswell.
Right.
By Colonel Philip J. Corso.
And Dr. John Alexander, is he the co-author?
No, he is not.
Oh, okay. It's just the author's just going to be the colonel himself.
Right.
Art, I appreciate you and appreciate you bringing the information to us, but it got me wide awake, and I'm eating breakfast.
All right. Thank you very much. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi.
I believe, I wish I could have gotten through earlier, but I believe I have a cooperation on the colonel's information.
All right.
That's rather a strange story, but my stepfather was an aircraft worker. Nothing special. He was a machinist.
Right.
But one of the things that he began doing before he retired, he was so good at his job that they set him up in a little shop off by himself, and he would do mock-ups or make models of things that engineers wanted.
Right.
Back before computers and after World War II. And they would ask him to fabricate something, and then they would take what he made to fit into an aircraft and make the blueprints up from it. In other words, once they figured out it would work, then they would do the design work and put it onto the line.
That makes sense.
But he told me of a piece of technology that they were working on that at the time I found completely unbelievable. And it's unfortunate that he's passed on now. But I'm almost certain that if I ask a few questions of the colonel that this would tie in. At the time, they were working on a surveillance aircraft, and they put some technology in there with, that my stepfather told me would photograph something the day before. In other words, if an aircraft would fly over, the pictures would indicate what was going on in that area the day before the aircraft had flown over.
Oh, my.
Okay. And you have to know this gentleman. He was a truck driver and soldier in World War One. Drove a truck. He told me many stories about his youth and fishing and growing up with his father and grandfather and stories about when he was in the Army. And everything, absolutely everything he ever told me was credible. I mean, I never suspected for one moment that this gentleman would exaggerate, let alone fabricate something.
Well, that's exactly the way I feel about the colonel.
But,
you know, when you listen to him, I mean, you just know. You know.
But if you have him on again, it might be interesting to ask him if he had given to the North American Aircraft Corporation some information on infrared technology.
Well, if that was true, then he should have called the book the day before Roswell. I'll ask him when we have him on again.
Very good. Thank you.
Thank you very much for the call. Entirely possible latent images. A lot of very interesting work being done quietly now with regard to objects and memory imprinted on objects. And it is being suggested that glass, crystal, and other substances actually may harbor memory of events that occurred around, near, or in their presence. We're talking about inanimate objects now. That they believe they may be able to draw voices or images from glass. I know, it sounds totally whacked out, but believe me, they're working on it. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
I didn't hear all of the program tonight, but I have a friend that tapes it, so I'll get caught up on it.
All right.
Off the subject a little bit, the A-10 incident, the missing A-10.
Yes.
Ed Dames, I believe they remote viewed that as crashing somewhere quite far away from where it crashed. Have you ever had a chance to talk to him about that?
About 2 days ago.
Well, I missed that one too, I guess.
You sure did. He said two things about the A-10. He said the pilot was dead,
yes.
And he said that he believed that it crashed in Arizona.
Yeah.
But he also said that he was not all that sure about the location. If you recall.
Okay. All righty. Well, thank you.
All right. Take care. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Art, fantastic show tonight.
Thank you.
One little thing that might connect with something that Colonel Corso said was, do you remember anything about the microscopic spider that's laid out in the petroglyphs there in South America?
No.
Well, there's a spider down there along with the monkey and the bird and some of the other things. But the spider is a microscopic spider, and the only reason they detected it was because of the organs, the sex organs that it had on its leg. But in relation to the spider web that he was saying that they could possibly clone.
Yes.
For this material.
I think he was talking about cloning the spider to get...
Right, right. But why, you know, these things are only readily visible from the air.
What's readily visible from the air?
Well, the petroglyphs down there.
I see.
So there would be kind of a correlation. You know, they've tried to relate that to a spaceport and numerous other things.
Yes, but, I know.
But that kind of hit a little button. And the other thing that kind of fascinated me was the fact that the alien spacecraft, when the... alien became part of the craft, if that did happen to fall into someone's hands, it would be very hard to operate that craft.
Impossible.
Right, right. So their protection for their technology.
No, there, it's impossible not to listen to the colonel and come away, well, for me, come away believing him.
Absolutely. A tremendous enlightening.
I appreciate the call, sir. Thank you.
Very good show. Thanks, Art. Bye.
Take care. First time caller line. You're on the air. Hi.
Hey, Art. I'm from Pennsylvania.
Okay.
Hey. It's interesting. I just wanted to note a few things. One thing was when you talked about the, getting images and sounds from glass.
Oh, yes.
Well, pottery that's been found, whole pots.
Yes.
From way back, we're talking several thousand years ago.
I know.
Actually recorded the goings-on in the room.
That's what I'm hearing. They're they're working on that now.
Yeah, that's been around for a little while, actually.
Mm-hmm.
What I wanted to say about the alien thing is that everything he said tonight is... I don't even think it's an issue. I mean, I think what the stuff he's saying is a given.
Yeah, I know. That's how everybody's reacting. But how do we break this out? How do we...
Well, the thing that goes beyond that is that there's... This is all technology and a consortium of people and groups that have been very cohesive for about 5,500 years. And they're higher, the deeper inner sanctum of the intelligentsia of that group will let things trickle down in strange ways.
Well,
but they'll take their secrets to the grave with them, which is why I think he as much as he knows and as much as he's seen and as much as he is accurate, I believe he is still not as close to the source as we might hope. And I do believe that
that's probably right. I'm sure he would say so himself.
But these are not extraterrestrials.
Many years have gone under the river since what he did.
Yeah. Well, I don't think these are extraterrestrials.
Well,
I do believe that they probably are engineered cybernetic type biological combinations.
Well, then you would have to believe we had that technology in the mid-40s.
Well, okay, when was titanium discovered? Last century, right?
I guess.
Okay, and the technology it requires to fuse that, to smelt that stuff, is extreme pressure and extreme temperature and certain gases you need to infuse into it so that it'll do what you want it to do as a metal.
But today, sir, titanium. We didn't have and don't have now the ability, as far as I know, to engineer biological entities.
We're getting awful close to it, and that's because some of that is being allowed to trickle down to us.
Even if we're getting close, you're trying to suggest we had that in the 40s.
It's already been done several thousand years ago.
Well, all right. I appreciate the call, and I have no way of agreeing or disagreeing with you with regard to several thousand years ago. But what the colonel described was a ship with biological entities that were engineered thousands of years ago. I don't know about that. But in the mid-40s, I don't think so. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Hello. I've noticed you were talking, he was talking about that they were going to put military bases on the moon back in the 50s.
There is actually, they've got the plan on paper. They've got that.
Yeah, wondering if he thought and the other man thought that in 69 we actually went to the moon. Because there was a debate about whether we went to the moon.
Yeah, NASA moon.